Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 18th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests for this episode include Samantha Cassidy, also Dr. David Tolan from Hoarders, Dr. Ian Smith, the new host of The Doctors. We'll also have the host of Judgment with Ashley Banfield. Ashley will be joining us again. Comedian and comedy writer Alan Zweibel, comic and host Lonnie Love, and also one of our favorites from Facts of Life, Lisa Welchel, will be joining us as well. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, and be sure and share with your friends as well. Our first guest is author Samantha Cassidy, talking about the book Sugar Shock. Got a new book to talk about. It is available now, Sugar Shock. It's 100-plus healthy swaps to cut back and create a healthier lifestyle. And with that, we've got Samantha Cassidy. Is it Cassidy or Cassidy? I'm so sorry. I don't want to pronounce the last name wrong.
Cassidy, but that's okay.
I tried. But Samantha, first off, thank you so much for your time this morning.
I'm so happy to be with you.
And tell us a little bit about the core concepts behind the book. Obviously, the sugar traps. Explain what the sugar trap is and how folks can avoid those, if you will.
Yeah, so Americans are taking in about 22 teaspoons of added sugar every day, and it's because it's in about 85% of packaged foods. So even things that you aren't aware of, like maybe your cereal or your yogurt or your plant-based milk or jerky, almost everything you're eating is going to have, you know, a little side of sugar with it. And so I mentioned that we're taking in 22 teaspoons of added sugar every day, but the recommendations are to have no more than 6 teaspoons for women and children, no more than 9 teaspoons for men. So you see, we have some cutting back to do. And that's what Sugar Shock is really all about, is helping you cut back in a way that still tastes good.
And I think that's the challenge, is winning folks over and making them believe that the non-sugar ingredients are better. And give us an example, if you will.
Oh, okay. I have one. I think I can make a believer out of you. So if you just swap Lily's chocolate chips, which are no added sugar chocolate chips, for your ordinary chocolate chips in a cookie recipe, the overall recipe will be reduced by 25 teaspoons of added sugar. So you'll cut 25 teaspoons of added sugar just by doing that one thing, and you will not notice any difference in taste. So I think that's the one that will win you over.
There you go. And I know there's several things in the book. What are the core tenets of the book to make it an easy transition or an easier transition for folks?
Yeah, so we talk about tracking your sugar intake, really identifying the main sources of sugar in your diet. So, for example, if you stop at the coffee shop every day and get a really frozen coffee drink or some other kind of coffee drink, maybe that's the place that you start cutting down. And so once you identify where sugar is showing up in your life, then we give you all the tools you need, dozens and dozens and dozens, really hundreds of swaps, for every category. And we also have a whole meal plan that really helps retrain your taste buds so that you're not craving sugar so much, because the sugar trap is really that you're taking in all these packaged foods, they have too much added sugar, it is lighting up the reward circuitry in your brain that is telling you, you know, that these foods taste amazing. But you need more and more of it to keep lighting up that circuitry. So you get trapped in this cycle. And at the same time, your taste buds are getting a total assault. So all they know is sugar, 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 sugar. And it makes it harder to enjoy real wholesome foods. So that's the trap, and that's the cycle that we break in the book.
And you hit me right on the head with that one, with the coffee drinks, because I was getting ready to go get one. I guess I'm gonna have to go with just a cold brew now.
You don't have to do just a cold brew, but you can try it with an unsweetened plant based milk or a regular milk, and then you can do things like have some cinnamon in it. That's one of the ways that you can make something taste sweet. It kind of tricks your taste buds into thinking you're having something sweet without adding sugar. Vanilla extract is also really good in coffee, or a coconut extract, or even an unsweetened coconut milk. Coconut, cinnamon, vanilla extract are ingredients that trick your taste buds into thinking that they're having that sugary substance, but they're totally unsweetened, so it's a really good fake out.
So again, the book, Sugar Shock, and Samantha, I want to make sure not only let folks know where they can find out more information about the book, but I know that it's an entire lifestyle as well, and I know you've got to have links there as well.
Yeah, so Sugar Shock is available wherever you buy your books, so Amazon, Target, Walmart, wherever you buy your books. And I'm on Instagram at Nutritionist Sam, and Sugar Shock is also on Instagram at Sugar Shock Detox. You can follow along and get some good healthy lifestyle tips.
All right. Well, Samantha, it has been great to visit with you. You won me over on one, so I'm going to have to check out some more of it myself. And I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. And I hope you do as well. And I hope your sugar dial down plan goes great.
Up next, we'll visit with Dr. David Tolan. You know him from Hoarders. He called in and visited with the latest season of Hoarders, season 11, I should say. First off, Dr. Tolan, thanks for your time this morning.
Hey, thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Now, season 11, are you surprised by the interest, I guess, that has peaked and kept going now 11 seasons in?
You know, it's funny. Back 11 years ago, they called me up and they said, we want to do this show about people who have hoarding behavior. And I said, I don't think anybody's going to want to watch that. And boy, was I wrong. And the reason I think that I was wrong is that this is such a common problem that it touches a lot of people's lives. So, you know, a lot of people watching it either have a touch of this behavior themselves, or if not, they know somebody, or they have come into contact with somebody who does have a touch of that behavior. And so it really hits a nerve, and it's the sort of thing that a lot of people can unfortunately relate to.
And what do you think are the early signs of a hoarding maybe being a possibility? Is it just, you know, not picking up and just getting overwhelmed? Is that kind of how it gets started normally?
Well, I think that one of the critical factors here is difficulty with decision making. So this is my, you know, and this comes out of lots of research on hoarding disorder, is that people with hoarding behavior seem to have a tough time making decisions about possessions. So the idea is that you know, you put something in their hands and you say, do you want to keep this or do you want to throw it away? And for a lot of us, that's a pretty intuitive kind of decision to make. It's no big deal. We say, I want to keep it or I want to toss it. It's not a problem. But for some people, they get that deer in the headlights look, and it's like they've been asked to solve an impossible riddle. And I think that's a piece of what you're seeing in you know, the onset of hoarding disorder, is that when it comes to possessions, that the person cannot effectively make decisions. And so what they do instead is they put the object down and they say, I'll deal with that later. You know, I'm sure I'll solve this eventually. And then, of course, they put more stuff on top of it and the clutter builds up. And the next thing you know, you've got a big problem on your hands.
And how much of it has personal relations or the personal feelings associated with said hoarding as well?
Yeah. So a lot of the time, what we see is that the person who's engaging in the hoarding behavior will express a strong feeling of attachment to their possession. And sometimes that possession is that attachment is sentimental. You know, like this reminds me of a good day that I had, or reminds me of a person that I care about, or reminds me of a cherished experience. Sometimes that attachment is more instrumental. Like, this is a really useful thing, or I or somebody might be able to use this. And then some people are attached to possessions just because of the aesthetic quality of the possession. Like, this just looks really pretty, so I can't throw it away. In any case, though, the person sort of feels pulled toward that possession.
And again, a new season starts tonight. And Dr. Tolan, tell us what is going to draw to some of the upcoming episodes that we're looking forward to tonight.
Well, in this 11th season of Hoarders, what you're going to see is that the team of experts is trying to tackle some of the biggest and most extreme and most challenging hoards in America. So in this season, you're going to be introduced to 8 individuals from across the country. And we, the team of psychologists and clean-out experts, is going to be trying to avert crises that range from jail time, financial ruin, to loss of property. And we're going to take an in-depth look at how the team and the families deal with a hoarding crisis of really epic magnitude.
And again, the season 11 premieres tonight on A&E, 8 Eastern, 7 local time. And Dr. David Tolan, always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with not only everything with the show, but all that you've got going on as well.
Oh, that's very nice. I have a website, drtolan.com. And then, of course, you can read all about Hoarders at aetv.com.
All right. Well, Dr. Tolan, great to visit with you this morning. Looking forward to the new season and hopefully catching up again real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Also had the chance to visit with this morning Dr. Ian Smith. He's the new host of The Doctors that premieres next Monday. Dr. Ian, always great to visit with you, my friend.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Now, taking the reins on The Doctors, how different is it going to be, and how much of the same is it going to be with the new season?
Yeah, so we're totally reformatting the show. We got a new studio. We got all different bells and whistles. Obviously, because of COVID, we're not having a live audience this year. It's just me as the host. Before, we used to have an ensemble host of doctors. It'll just be me in studio and interviewing guests via Zoom. But we're going to have a lot of great segments for people. Yeah, we're going to cover the X's and O's of medicine like we always do and give people the information they need about COVID and vaccinations, you know, the real scientifically based information that we think the country has so badly needed and has not been getting. But then we're also going to have some fun. We're going to have comedians come on and give us a light take on things. We're going to have a book club. We're going to have musicians come on and talk and sing. So we're really opening and broadening up the show. So it's more than just medicine, but it's about the holistic approach to how we're living.
And of course, Dr. Ian, you've been putting out 2 books a year, now got the show and so many other things going on. How do you intertwine all of those together? They seem like a perfect marriage for the show.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed writing. My 19th book is just coming out. It's called The Unspoken, which is a mystery. So I encourage people to check out The Unspoken on Amazon. But I'd write a health book in the fall and in the spring. I do a mystery or fiction related work in the fall. But it's great because I think that my experience as a writer will further inform and enhance my role as the host on the show. And there are a lot of collaborations there.
And for you, during the COVID, has this been an inspirational time for you, or has it been a time that you've had to fight to find the writing or the inspiration for other things in your life?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I decided early on in COVID that I was going to really focus on being productive and try to find that silver lining in the cloud. So while there's been a lot of misery, there's been a lot of loss of life, a lot of loss of life experience. There's some things in life you just can't control, but there are things in life you can control. And part of what we want to do on the show is give people their power back. The theme is called Take Your Power Back. And we want to help people understand that you can still be inspired and you can be nourished and challenged in a positive way so that you feel like you have more control than what you've had since the pandemic started.
And again, the new season comes up on Monday, 2 p.m. on Freedom 43, Monday through Friday. Check it out there. And Dr. Ian, always want to make sure and let him know where to keep up with everything social media-wise as well.
Sure. My Instagram is at Dr. Ian Smith. Spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith. It's Dr. Ian Smith on Twitter. And please go to the Doctors TV. That's our website. We have a lot of fun, and we just want people to really engage with us. We're going to give you guys a show that you want that's going to help change your life every day.
That's awesome. And Dr. Ian, always great to visit with you, and hope you have a great rest of your week, my friend.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Of course, you can find out more information. Just follow him on all socials, Dr. Ian Smith. Our next guest is the host of Judgment with Ashley Banfield. We talked to her last week leading up to episode one. We'll talk about episode two today. First off, good to visit with you again, my friend.
Hey, it's good to talk to you, Cameron. How are you doing?
Doing well. And after the first episode, once that got underway and on the air, do you get to relax a little bit, feel a little less tension after you finally get that work out to the public, if you will?
I think, you know, when you do a premiere, there's so much work leading up to it that the days all blend into each other. And so it is always nice when that first one takes lunch. But the workload doesn't change that much because we're gonna put one of these hours out every single week.
And what is the episode coming up this Sunday night? What are we looking forward to? What are we gonna discuss? I should say.
So we started with Casey Anthony, and we're moving into that other woman who made her way across our hearts, Jodi Arias from Arizona. And this one, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you, this one stuck in the craw of a lot of folks because the number of days that she took that stand in a row and lied through her teeth was nothing short of extraordinary.
And for you, I know one of the things you pride yourself on is being able to give an unapologetic open view of what's gone on in there and hoping for folks to have an open mind. And do you think this one's going to change anybody's minds or maybe just make them understand the situation a little better?
Well, one of the things about the Jodi Arias story that that I found fascinating, once you get past your anger at that woman, you look at the system of jurisprudence when it comes to the death penalty and women, and you start to see a bit of a pattern. I think juries have a really, really tough time, for whatever reason, looking across the courtroom at a woman and rendering a death verdict and then a death sentence. And in Jodi's case, there is no other reason why America has actually held on to the death penalty for so long other than the worst of the worst. And Jodi fits that to a T. I mean, she fits it like Spanx. So the fact that they did not render a death verdict for her tells me there's something else going on. Because had she been a man, it wouldn't have taken two verdict trials to reach life.
And in your studies and your history and learning about the court systems in general, do you see a big disparity between the male and the female jurisdiction, the way things are handled other than the death penalty?
Generally speaking, it's a little harder for juries to look at a woman and imagine that she's guilty of something heinous. I think they think she's perfectly guilty of something, you know, white collar. That's not tricky. I don't think they discriminate there. But I do think they think it's pretty tricky to see a woman do something ultra violent. Holding a gun at, you know, distance, they would imagine that that's acceptable. But hand-to-hand combat, they struggle with that. And a lot of times you'll see defense attorneys really mine that possibility, saying, look at the size of this defendant. She couldn't possibly have fought with this giant person who was a victim. I mean, that was a thing for Jodi, right? They said that Travis was a huge guy. How possibly could this little Jodi Arias have carried off this butchering of this big man? Well, she did. She did. She used a knife and she used a gun and she did it. It's that simple. And the evidence was really clear. It's just hard for juries to get their heads around that.
Right now, what are some of the other highlights we look forward to as the season progresses?
So as we continue on, there's another, and this is a coincidence, not by design. Unloading all the crazy women that we covered, but Eileen Wuornos, Florida versus Eileen Wuornos, America's first female serial killer. She is a fascinating case because again, she took the stand, and I mean that was a tragic case of unbelievable mental illness that really wasn't highlighted the way it should have been in that case. She was executed. I think she sped her own execution, as we've seen in other cases. But Eileen Wuornos was a really fascinating character. Phil Spector is another really interesting case because he blamed the victim and said she killed herself. I didn't kill her. She killed herself. And there she was sitting at his front door with her purse on her shoulder trying to leave. Who kills themselves while waiting to get a ride home? Purse on shoulder. I don't know anybody who's killed herself with purse hanging on shoulder. You know, I mean, the evidence in that case was pretty spectacular as well, as were the hairdos.
That's right. And again, a new episode Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 local time on Court TV. And Ashley, always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything social media wise as well.
I'm on Facebook at Ashley Danson. You got to spell it A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, as well as Insta at Ashley Danfield with the blue check. They're all verified. And Twitter, TV Ashley. So jump on. Let's talk.
All right. Well, Ashley, always great to visit with you. Hope you have a great rest of your week and look forward to talking again.
Thanks, Cameron. I always love our chats. You take care.
Of course, you can follow her on all of the socials, Ashley Banfield. Up next is comedian and author Alan Zweibel. First off, Alan, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Now, Alan, the book we've talked about before, Laugh Lines, My Life Helping Funny People Be Funnier, and now available on via the audio version. And Alan, for you to have this book out there, to get the feedback that you've had, and to be able to share the stories that have been welled up in you for so long, how cool is it to get that feedback now?
You know, it's really nice. That's a wonderful question because it's so personal. You know, my wife's name is in it. My children are in it. You know, my dear friend Gilda, my dear friend Gary Shandling. And I, you know, there's a lot of soul in the book. It's not only, you know, and then I wrote this and then I wrote that. There's a lot of heart. I get into the relationships I've had with people like Billy Crystal, who are friends, you know, and the book is dedicated to my sister who passed away. And she was the first person I ever made laugh. And so there's a lot of heart in it. So in order to write that way, you've got to expose yourself, and for people to embrace it, boy, it feels really, really rewarding. Because if they didn't like it, it would hurt. Because I am so exposed. Oh, so you don't like my life, huh?
And for you to be able to share the laughs that you've been able to share with over the years and be a part of so many things that have touched lives, I mean, how cool is that on a personal level for you to be able to know that you've made a difference in people's lives that way?
Well, that's a great question. And once again, it's like, boy, it's been a fun ride. I've been, it's very rewarding to get that kind of feedback. And I also consider myself very fortunate to have been in the places that I've been, you know, spanning the Catskill Mountains and the beginning of Saturday Night Live. And it's Gary Shandling's show is the beginning of cable comedy, you know, in 1986. And some of the Broadway work I've done. And also, you know, the book also tells about, you know, some of the foul tips. It's not all, you know, I wrote a movie once that Roger Ebert, when he reviewed it, he used the word hate 14 times in one paragraph. So, you know, it's been, I look back at it, and it's been, the ride has had peaks and it's had valleys. And I've been really lucky that because of my friends and because of the people I've been able to work with, there's been more peaks and valleys.
Now, Alan, for you, what has maybe been the biggest inspiration to comedy for you?
Wow, what a great question. You know, growing up, I listened to comedy albums. I listened to Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks through the 2000-Year-Old Man. Later on, Woody Allen, when he came out with those wonderful, wonderful albums of his nightclub routines. That's what got me really interested. But the thing that visually started me was the old Dick Van Dyke Show. You know, Carl Reiner, who became a good friend and a mentor, he recently passed, but he created the Dick Van Dyke Show, and I looked at this show, and I saw Dick Van Dyke was this nice-looking guy, and he wrote for television, and he was married to a very pretty Mary Tyler Moore, and they had a kid and a nice house in the suburbs, and he spent his days, you know, at work, lying on a couch and joking around with Buddy and Sally, and I went, here, I'd like to do that. You know, so I just try to figure out, okay, how can I get to be that, you know? So that was seriously the launch of the desire, you know. And then I got lucky. I wrote jokes for these comedians of the Catskill Mountains after college. And then I took the jokes they wouldn't buy from me because I was 21 and 22, and they were my parents' age. So, I didn't want to keep on writing jokes about getting the driveway paved. You know, there was Woodstock, there was Nixon, there was Watergate. I wanted to talk about other things. And then when I got the job on this new show called Saturday Night Live, it was every dream I ever had came true, and it was just magical.
Now, what is the biggest difference that you can see, Alan, over your span of career in comedy? What is the biggest difference now in prep for comedy as opposed to when you first came in?
Well, I would have to think that people's, this PC thing is really choking the life out of the funny. You know, it used to be everyone made fun of each other, and then we went out to lunch together. You know what I mean? Because it was done out of love. It was done out of fun. It was done out of being able to laugh at ourselves, you know? And now you can write something which is just intended to be funny and you think is innocuous, and you get surprised who you offended. You go, I didn't even mean that. That wasn't meant that. I did. You know what I mean? So I think I'm hoping that the pendulum swings back towards the middle, where this hypersensitivity eases up a little bit. And, because, comedy is a common language. We all laugh together. It's it binds us, but when you put restrictions on it and you censor it and you choke the life out of it, it makes things a little bit more divisive, I should say. And that's just antithetical to what the whole PC thing is supposed to be. So, and if you speak to anybody who does what I do, we're all waiting for, hopefully things will start easing up again.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Now, again, the book now available, the audio version, Laugh Lines, My Life, Helping Funny People Be Funnier. Alan Zweibel, always great to visit with you. And I want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find out more information about the book and everything else you've got going on as well.
Well, my website is alanzweibel.com, and what you'll have there is a little preview of a movie I just wrote. You won't see the preview, but you'll learn about it, a movie I just wrote with Billy Crystal that Billy directed, and he stars with Tiffany Haddish, and it's called Here Today, and we're waiting to find out how and when it's going to come out. Will we wait for the theaters to reopen? Will it go straight to a streaming service? So that's on there. All my books are on there, and I'm easily found on Twitter at Alan Zweibel and Instagram at Alan Zweibel Official. So I'm very gettable.
There you go. Well, Alan, always great to visit with you. I truly appreciate your time and look forward to talking again real soon, my friend.
I look forward to it too, and stay healthy and be well.
Of course, for more information, you can visit him on all socials, Alan Zweibel. Up next is host and comedian, Lonnie Love.
First off, Lonnie, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Cameron. How you doing? You know, all I'm doing is trying to do TikTok videos and stay away from the Rona. That's it.
that's a challenge in both. I've never gotten into the TikTok. I mean, what inspired you to even hit that off?
You know, I just wanted something different, and I have a lot of young kids around me, and they're doing all these videos. I'm like, oh, it's so great. And I'm like, they're like little movies. And so once I started doing them, I'm like, wow, this is really easy. And it's fun, and so it's something to, give people entertainment, especially right now with what we're doing. So I started doing it, and I'm still improving, but, I'll find another 7-year-old to help me.
That's what it takes when it comes to technology, isn't it?
Exactly. Find a 7 or 8-year-old to, show you how to handle technology. It's an amazing time right now.
Now, we prefaced the book. I tried to change so you don't have to. And Lonnie, when did you first grasp the concept or even think about putting this down on paper? The story, kind of all your ups and downs, the heartache, and obviously the funny stories as well.
Well, people that know me, they usually know me from Chelsea Lately or the show The Real. I wanted to let people know my true story because it's you know, I've been doing comedy, stand-up comedy for over 20 years, but I also wanted to give people a story of hope, and I think that's what we need right now. I was raised in the Brewster Project during the crack era in the 80s, and I was able, you know, at one time I was homeless, at one time I was married, I was an engineer, I have an engineering degree, and so these are stories that I actually have already had because I always journaled. I've been journaling since I was 10 years old. So these are stories, and some are funny, some are sad. But I want to show people the process that it took for me to go from living in the project, a low-cost housing place, to being an Emmy-winning talk show host. And I just wanted to give this back to my fans as a love letter. And also anybody that's going through a crossroads right now, or maybe they need some advice or some help, I hope that this inspires them, and that's the reason for the book.
Now, who has been the biggest influence? I know that one of the things that one of the tenets of the book is to break up with a best friend when you know they're not good for you. But who has been good for you and been maybe the biggest influence?
You know, it depends on different times of my life, honest, Cameron, that people have been there and inspired me. When I was a young girl and I was homeless. I was working at General Motors, and my mentor became this man named Mr. Arnold, and I talk about that in the book. Mr. Arnold really gave me the foundation and changed my life. I ended up going to college. And then, you know, from there, you know, engineering, I had a wonderful manager that influenced me and helped me get through the process of being a young engineer, you know, and thrown into the corporate world. Then I go from that to becoming a comedian. And I would say the biggest influence at that time when I was coming up was actually meeting the great Joan Rivers. And I have a wonderful story about, you know, the advice that she gave me and how I met her. And so there have been different people in different parts of my life. But I think it's important to embrace all of those points. And if you're going through something, try to find somebody that can help you. That, you know, like you're trying to become a cook, find somebody that's a cook that can help you. They'll find you a mentor. If you're a young person, seek out mentors, seek out people that have experience to help you get through your life.
And how important is it for you to have self-confidence and also awareness of yourself to be able to always be there for yourself in the long run as well?
Well, like I said, this book is about embracing your flaws. I think flaws are something that, you know, if you want to fix them, that's fine. But to me, many times, flaws are a way for you to actually stand out, and they've been given to you by God, and that's my belief. So I think living in a society that wants to put everybody in one bucket, and we're not in one bucket. So it's really hard sometimes because when you feel this society pressure of, you got to be this way or you're not normal, that's just not the right thinking, and it really takes time. And I talk about in the book the process that I took so that I wouldn't, and that's why the title, I Tried to Change. I Tried to. So believe me, if I tried, it didn't work for me, just be yourself. And I know it's hard, but this is how you be yourself. You know, understand and ask yourself when you're doing something, do you feel good? Feel good about this. Is there some pain and aching that you don't feel good? And if you don't, just stop it and do what you want to do so you can move on better.
And Lonnie, what do you think is the biggest challenge? Right now, obviously, times are it's dark and heavy times for everybody. Does that make it more challenging to try to bring humor to people's lives?
Oh, definitely. But, you know, that's the job of the artist. Job right now for us as artists, you know, for us, not only to give information, you're giving information, but it's also to inspire people and to see the levity. That's why after every chapter of my book, I have a set of jokes that pertain to that chapter. And it shows you that there is hope and there is levity in life. But this is our job. This is our greatest job in our lifetime, is to help people get through what they're going through. So I don't look at it as a point of mourning. I look at it as a challenge. And so that's why, you know, right now, you see that the numbers are spiking up for COVID. Stay in the house, my book, read somebody else's book, spend time with your family. There's nothing out there in the streets, really.
That's right. Nothing good out there for you at all. That's for sure. Again, the new book available now, I Trying to Change So You Don't Have To, True Life Lessons from Lonnie Love. And Lonnie, I always want to make sure and let folks know where they can keep up with everything you've got going on social media wise as well.
Go to Lonnie Love on Twitter, Atomic Lonnie Love on IG, and I have a website, just LonnieLove.com. Thank you so much, Cameron.
Lonnie, great to visit with you, and hope you have a great rest of your week.
Too. Thank you.
Follow her on all socials, Lonnie Love, as well. And wrapping things up, you know her from Facts of Life and so many other things over the years. We had the chance to visit with Lisa Welchel.
Lisa Welchel on the phone with us this morning, and Lisa, always good to visit with you, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell us when, how Collector's Call was first approached to you, and what your original thoughts were whenever it was first approached to you.
Yeah, I work with the producer, of course, so when he reached out to me, I was interested at first, but I'm not a collector. But what really hooked me was I've been a life coach for the last 3 years, and it really was the actual, not really the collections as much as the collectors, because the more I got into it, the more I realized these collectors are just all very, very fascinating people, and it's their stories. They're always tied to something in their childhood. Without fail, every collector is really trying to capture or recapture an emotion from their childhood, whether it's a memory or a relationship or a time or a season or something, just to hang on to and bring into their adult life and keep it present and expand on that. And it's really, really fascinating to hear these stories and to see what they've done with it.
And I like how the different episodes that are upcoming, you know, you don't talk about the collection necessarily, but it's instead meeting the collector. And how cool is it for you to be able to tell those collector stories that they share as well?
So wonderful, because, you know, stories are going to resonate with all of us. We're going to find ourselves in the stories. So, for instance, you know, this Sunday night, It's a superhero collector. The next Sunday night is a vintage car collector, and the next Sunday night is a Lucille Ball collector. You know, the superhero collector, I didn't read comic books. I don't collect superheroes, but I tell you what, I had a son, I have a nephew, I have a stepson. I'm going to resonate. There's going to be something that's going to just bring me back to my son's childhood, bring me back to my brother's childhood, or the vintage cars. Oh, it's going to be bring me back to, oh, I remember my grandfather, or Lucille Ball. That's going to bring me back to coming home from school as a fifth grader and turning on Lucille Ball and eating my Twinkie and waiting for my dad, you know, my mom and dad to come home. All of those, I'm going to find myself in those stories. And that's why I think this show just absolutely, no matter what the collection is, we're going to find ourselves in it.
And you talked about the nostalgia and being a part of Facts of Life, just one of those great shows that so many people resonate with. To be able to see the nostalgia that you've been able to be a part of as well in people's lives, what's that like for you?
You know what? The older I get, the more I appreciate it and see what a privilege it is. You know, I certainly appreciated getting to act and getting to have fun with the rest of the girls, getting to have the money and the opportunities when I was in, you know, as a teenager and in my 20s. That was a standalone, wonderful privilege. But the older I get, I appreciate the simple things like going to Trader Joe's yesterday and the guy restocking, recognizing me, and him just saying, you know, it's just, you brought so much joy to my life growing up, and it's made my day to get to meet you in person. He said, I thought I recognized you, but as soon as you opened your voice, you know, opened your mouth, I recognized that voice. And, you know, that kind of thing now means as much to me, because, as you get older, you know what's important.
And again, the Collector's Call Season 2 continues on, again, 10 Eastern, 9 local time this Sunday night on MeTV. And Lisa, always want to make sure and let folks know where they can keep up with all the other things you've got going on as well.
Well, that's very thoughtful of you. Easiest way, just like everybody else, social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or my website, and all of it, Lisa Welchel. It's spelled with an H, W-H-E-L-C-H-E-L.
All right. Well, Lisa, always great to visit with you. Appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you real soon again, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Again, thanks for tuning us in for this 18th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, find me on Instagram at @AKA_Cameron, at Twitter at Cameron Dole, on the Facebook page at Cameron Dole Altus. You can also follow Good Questions with Cameron Dole at GQ with Cam on all the socials. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. We'll see you soon for episode 19.